All right, come on. Let's go.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, let's do it.
Right.
Getting tired.
Getting tired. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we do what we can with some degree of success on some days and less on others to make the day make sense.
Today, I think it is safe to say, to declare with confidence, could go either way in terms of making any sense. It is, but that I am certain of, it will go either way. It is Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. It is, in fact, officially, by what is now a global standard, a year since the World Health Organization declared a pandemic. Everything changed. It was only a few days from now last year that a lot of people went home. A lot of schools closed.
Yep.
America changed in ways that, you know, we'll be feeling the effects of for years. So, yeah, shell status today is like,
I don't know. I mean, how are you? I'm not. I've definitely had worse days. This is definitely not the worst day.
No. I feel pretty good. I think, like, you know, shout out to the person on Twitter who said that basically what we're in right now is limbo. Like, we're so close to the end, we're just not quite there yet. And limbo, I think, is the best word for it. But I don't feel horrible. I feel hopeful.
Yeah.
And mad.
You know what the other part of this is, though, is that we had a very clear, well, not, it wasn't very clear, right? Because we saw this coming in January from China, and then we saw the February economic shock with the demand shock and all that jazz. So we sort of eased our way into it, as it were. But then, you know, on the 11th, we were all like, boom, we know what's going on. There's not going to be that boom date on the back end, right? It's not going to end. We're not going to look back in 30 years and say, oh, yes, the 14th of June of 2021 is when this pandemic ended, right? It's going to trickle down depending on where you are and what your business is and what your vaccine status is and all of that jazz. And that's going to be a little tricky.
Yeah. I wonder if that's the case.
I'm reasonably sure of what I'm saying here. But
okay. I hear you.
Big change in Guy Brisdahl. He's really sure about what he's saying.
I, for one, am shocked.
Yeah.
I'm sitting back in my chair. Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious. I mean, you know, March 11th in some ways was not completely arbitrary, but somewhat, right? Because the virus had been happening in other parts of the world. And it seems like it might also be human nature to pick a date.
But I agree.
We're going to want, maybe that's it. Maybe what I'm saying is, but we're going to want a date, but you're absolutely right that it's more like, and frankly, as usual, the guidance about everything is so confusing and everybody is arguing about it so much and some make sense and some doesn't, that, you know, it is going to be sort of more of just like keeping our own counsel and probably just yelling at each other a bunch more, which I am so excited about.
Seriously.
Let's do the news instead.
So standard drill, news, and then something to make us smile, and then we'll get out of the way. What do you got?
I have two things. I just do, because nothing has changed in a year that much.
I've got three things.
Yes! I love it. One is a follow-up, because we were talking about how everything that we think of as our security framework is totally broken. And that was fun. And then yesterday in the Washington Post was this piece about how this startup, Verkada, which is among so many, because one of the fastest growing Internet of Things categories is personal cameras for your house and your babies and your dogs and security and this and that. So this company essentially, with a single breach, hackers were able to just see, in some cases, real-time video and also just images and videos across its entire client list, and just look at classrooms and bedrooms and houses and neighborhoods and sidewalks and stop putting cameras on everything because no one knows how to do security. Like, we used to worry about a surveillance state, and now we just surveil ourselves happily. All day, every day.
Yes. Well, and that goes to what I was saying yesterday. Right. Yeah. That goes to what I was saying yesterday, right? We're all kind of blasé about our personal data being taken, and now everybody's going to be blasé about cameras. And I'm like, no, don't do that, man. Do not do that.
Don't do it. Just please don't do it.
Do not do
that. And then I have got to commend to you, I mean, probably the greatest story I've read in a really long time was published today at technologyreview.com, the MIT Tech Review site. And it is, it's phenomenal on many levels. Like, one, I'm just geeking out at the sheer kind of brilliance of the journalism here, which is like Facebook gave this reporter at Technology Review access to its head of its responsible AI department. And was you know, on the cusp of publishing a paper about what its responsible AI division does with respect to bias and making sure things like that pesky housing law violation thing where, you know, you could buy ads but say, I don't want any black people to see these housing ads on its platform, that they have totally gotten rid of that thanks to this responsible AI division. And she was like, cool. What about hate speech and conspiracy theories? And every time the company was like, no, we're working on this bias thing. And so it ends up being, it's very long. It's a very long piece about that incontrovertibly shows, one, the long history of Facebook being well aware of the measurable harm. And in fact, measuring the harm that divisiveness, polarizing content, conspiracy, lies, hate speech was doing on its platform up to and including helping cite genocide in Myanmar. And that at every point, they walked away from those realizations because those realizations would impede growth. And when they set up a, you know, a responsible AI division, they said, we really need you to focus specifically on this problem of tackling AI bias, because that is likely to be where we're going to encounter regulation. And that, writes the author Karen Howe, is essentially irrelevant to fixing the bigger problems of misinformation, extremism, and political polarization. And it's all of us who pay the price. And again, there's been tons of reporting on all of the times that Facebook was informed, that the leadership team was informed, that it had groups that were essentially unrecommendable, that its algorithms were continuing to recommend. That, you know, this guy who's in charge of this AI division essentially discovered, like, yeah, wow, it can't get enough hate and misinformation because people love it. It's super engaging. And it is a remarkable – it's just a remarkable – in 2017 even, or mid-2018, according to the Wall Street Journal, there was a task force that was like, maybe we should fix this and this so we don't keep recommending these hate groups. And then they were like, it's anti-growth. And then the task force just went away. And all of this caused me to tweet – that, look, for all intents and purposes, at this point, Facebook is cigarettes.
That's exactly like, what I was going to say. It's big tobacco, right?
It's big tobacco.
Yes.
Like, it knows its product causes harm, and the harm has been, you know, the harm is, it feels looser and vaguer and harder to define in some ways until you have a capital insurrection or a genocide in Myanmar or a measurably more polarized body politic, which Facebook has data to suggest. And so, they know their product causes harm and they keep minimizing the harm to keep selling product. Like, there's no difference between this and big tobacco.
Yeah. It's
hashtag
it's
Facebook instead of, is cigarettes.
Right. Instead of cigarettes will kill you, it's Facebook will kill democracy. Right. I mean, that's kind of where this
and
goes.
And maybe even you.
That's kind of where this goes. And maybe even you. Maybe yes, even true. You. That's true because a lot of the logical outcome of this is violence and we've seen where that goes. Yeah. What a great insight that is, truly. I think that's and yet,
great story.
And yet, here we are.
Here we are.
All of us on Facebook or Insta or whatever.
Well, we all used to smoke too. So keep hope alive.
Well, that's true. That's true. That's right. That's true. And it took a very long time to get cigarettes to be, you know, socially unacceptable and all of this stuff. So we will see where this goes.
Yeah.
Okay, I lied. I don't have three. I have two, but I have three links. So Tucker Carlson said something yesterday. We all know who Tucker Carlson is, right? Fox News guy. Tucker Carlson said something yesterday, which was just the most idiotic thing that he has said about this very specific area in a very long time, right? He likes to say he's a – sorry, I got to let the dog in. He likes to say he's a supporter of the military and likes a strong national defense and this and that. And he says on his program yesterday, in response to some comments, some changes that the Pentagon has made to be more accommodating to women, they're changing uniform styles and changing hairstyle regulations. Carlson says, so we've got new hairstyles and maternity flight suits. Pregnant women are going to fight our wars. It's a mockery of the U.S. military. And the American military security establishment was not having it. The United States Army posted this tweet of a female soldier in dress blues in an honor guard. She is just nothing but badass. Veterans all over the place were posting things like, gee, Mr. Guy who's never served, here's a picture of me at 41 and a half weeks extremely pregnant as a sergeant first class about to deploy to Iraq and all of these things. She didn't deploy, actually. She had her baby and then deployed later. But anyway, just the response has been overwhelming, and I'm really, really, really glad to see it. And I will quote only one person here. It's Sergeant Major, Master Gunnery Sergeant Scott Stalker of the Space Command. He's a 28-year Marine. I'll remind everyone that his opinion, which he has a right to, is based off actually 0 days of service in the armed forces. And I just think it's posturing and performative, and it really bugged me. And I'm glad to see that the military was climbing on that one. Really bummed me.
Yeah.
Really bummed me.
I mean, the DOD. Specifically it's calling out of network. Yeah. I know. Yeah. Show us who you really are. And, like, as far as I'm concerned, keep it coming. Like, if this is all you've got, show us who you really are, because this is not a winning strategy.
Yeah. Okay. Item number two, super quick, with a hat tip to Kimberly Adams, who posted this in the Marketplace Slack. The infrastructure bill is out. You know that President Biden signed his relief bill today. His next big thing is a multi-trillion dollar infrastructure bill, which we desperately need, right? And even President Trump, though he was unable to for a whole lot of reasons, even he tried to get a $2 trillion infrastructure bill through. But I was perusing it as we were about to get ready to do the pod, and I thought this was really interesting. Title I, that is to say the first substantive piece of this bill, Title I, Subtitle A, that is to say the first piece of the first substantive part of this bill is, and this is a quote, digital equity. And then it goes from there. Digital equity programs, broadband affordability, all this just really interesting stuff. They're doing digital first in an infrastructure bill instead of railroads, highways, airports. I think that's Congress is getting it a little bit, I think, is what that means. Yeah. And I think that's good.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. Yeah. I mean, like you said, Title I to be universal broadband and next generation 911, among other things, is super notable and tells you exactly what the future holds. Yeah. It's a big deal. I agree.
Yeah, and we will see actually how much of this gets through Congress, but it's a good start. It's a good start that they've got this bill. It's written and it is out now, and you can read it.
So wait, you had to do to have infrastructure week was make a bill?
You had to actually write a bill. Yeah, you had to actually write a bill.
Yeah. Seems so
instead of so truly
straightforward.
Well, so the really interesting part, and this is just me being too far down in the weeds of this thing, the Trump administration's infrastructure week plan, which we kept being promised was going to come in 2 weeks, was a page and a half by Peter Navarro, written during the transition, saying we're going to take $200 billion worth of government money and leverage that up to get private investment to the tune of $2 trillion. So it's going to be interesting to see how I think Congress decides to pay for this. They will, of course, borrow a ton of money, but I'll be interested to see if there's going to be any private spending in here. But yes, an actual bill which runs, according to the PDF, 476 pages, not a page and a half.
Well, that seems serious.
Yeah.
This is serious. Sorry, I went all the way back to like my child's childhood shows.
What
was that? It's from Wonder Pets. It's from Wonder Pets. Okay, maybe we should just go to the Happy Place thing before I sing the whole song.
Yeah, Ben, let's go.
Because it'll happen.
And I'm going to bail on mine because number one, it's old. I mean, I kind of love it, but it's old. And yours is just cooler. So you go with yours.
It's not mine. It's ours, which is the best part.
Well, it is ours. That's true.
Yes. Okay, so here's our Make Me Smile. Kai, Kimberly, and I had a really fun day today, and I'm going to open it with what is kind of a not very humble brag, because it turns out that that our show is popular to like an interstellar degree, and and today to entertain an astronaut on the ISS who's a Make Me Smart fan, we got to talk to her. We got to have a Zoom call.
It was super cool.
With astronaut Shannon Walker from the International Space Station. And she did the thing that you do when you're talking to like your parents on your computer, which is you turn your computer around to show them like, you know, I don't know, your kid or your art that you hung or whatever, except she showed us the Earth.
It was so cool. So she was up in that section of the space station called the cupola or the cupola. I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's the thing with all the windows. And she showed us the view out of there. And then we talked for a little while and she took us on a little tour of the space station. It's a thing that NASA does for its astronauts to let them stay connected and let them have some, you know, some social and emotional wealth and health there. And it's really, really cool. And so we talked and it was awesome. It was just awesome.
It was so awesome. And we got, there were other astronauts. Like she just walked by some other astronauts. Oh, so we're just chilling, having dinner.
She walked by where they were eating. Yeah. Yeah, it was really cool.
And we got to see like a treadmill. I mean, it was a really neat experience. And of course, it's obviously, it makes us feel fantastic that someone is listening to us from space and wants to talk to us. So we just felt really grateful. And I think that I can say safely that all three of us have been smiling all day.
Yeah, it was super fun.
It was super fun.
We're all space birds too, so that's good. Yeah.
Yep. We feel really lucky. And that's pretty much it. I hope you guys have something you feel lucky about today. You should.
There you go. So I'm going to say, bring it home here, this was not really that much of a Holla Dot Shell.
No, it's actually been a great day.
It was actually mostly full. Mostly full. All right.
I think there is hope. I really feel hope on the horizon. We're like so close.
Okay.
So close.
I'm going to go with that.
Yep.
All right. We're done. Tomorrow, Economics on Tap, YouTube live stream, 3:30 here in California and up and down the West Coast, 6:30 on the East Coast. Tune in. Join us. Check it out.
Yep. And everything in between. In the meantime, sign up for our newsletter because it's so interesting. This week, we're going to look at the big relief plan, of course, and how it sets out to fix the K-shaped pandemic economy, although I'm sticking with my prediction, rubber band rebound. Sign up at marketplace.org/newsletters. I think we popularized K-shape, so we could probably popularize rubber band.
Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner does production stuff for us. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and the Make Me Smart skill on your smart devices.
Today's program was engineered by the wonderful Ben Holliday, who also composed our theme music with Daniel Ramirez, who we miss every day, but I know he's off doing a really cool job. Our senior producer is Donna Tam. The executive director of On Demand is Satarni Avis.
There we go.
Basically, we like went to space today by the transitive properties of nothing whatsoever. Totally. Look out my window. It's
so cool.
And
the connectivity was amazing, too. That was the crazy part.
They have better Wi-Fi in space than Kai has at his house.
I was just going to say,
I'm not exaggerating.
She has better connectivity than I do. That is a dead fact.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.